Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Plus minus.
Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot!
Tim Kawakami deserves all the credit.
Plus minus.
That is a word right there.
I didn't even hear what you said. What'd you say?
Fluffle.
Plus minus.
Yeah, like you, Marcus Thompson.
Marcus always tell the truth. Plus minus.
The only thing that I would say to Ethan Strauss is that he's a pretty damn good reporter. He's well
respected.
Plus minus.
I think he got the highest plus minus in the season in NBA history.
Welcome back to Warriors Plus Minus. We are off our All-Star break hiatus. And guess who is not off their All-Star break hiatus? The Golden State Warriors defense. No, that was just a shot. I forgot about the Utah game. My bad.
So easy to just kill them for
just
the losses.
Forgot about
just
it.
Forget about the win. Negative.
It looks
negative,
like Utah
negative.
Wasn't back on their All-Star break. We got the whole crew in the building. Anthony Slater, our superstar beat writer. Ethan Strauss and Tim Kawakami, the Bay Area legend, who I'm surprised is here because 49ers got moves to make. I kind of wanted Corey Linsley.
That's a high ticket item.
It's going to be 38-year-old Alex Mack now. He's going to
be
miss five games.
Are you guys talking like O-line Niners or something here? What's
going on?
Sorry,
we're talking.
My bad.
What is this? Take it to the Niner spot.
Tim, are they gonna keep K-1? They already lost Kendrick Bourne, who's like,
hey, let's talk
guy.
Warriors. Let's
He's
talk
gonna
Warriors.
Keep
let's talk
going
Warriors.
With it.
Yeah, let's talk Warriors. Let's talk Warriors.
As if y'all want to talk Warriors. All right, here's what's interesting to me. Everybody thought they would lose to the Lakers, right? Like nobody thought they were gonna win that game, especially after they got blown out the first time.
Without Gasol and Davis and Caruso, I actually thought they had a chance, to be honest with you.
Y'all really thought That's the winnable. Warriors were going to beat the Lakers?
Was I going to go on Twitter and be like, I'm predicting a win? No, but like that was a winnable game, like if you think about
Can
it.
Can you talk like that more often?
Yeah.
That's a great character. Hi, I'm Anthony Slater.
I'm going to predict. This is what I'm going to predict now.
I'm the hack version.
Steph, I'm just wondering how you could possibly lose that game. I can't even do it. I'm sorry.
That wasn't a good loss.
No. It was terrible. It was awful. And it was made worse, a little aside, a bit of commentary on the commentary. People complain that Fitzgerald will try to blame bad luck for a situation. And when a guy's hitting a bunch of open threes, say, oh, he's only a 32% three-point shooter. Unbelievable he's hitting these. You know what's worse, in my opinion, is when they're building up the competition when the Warriors are getting smacked. When I was watching that game and Fitz
Oh, that
just
Utah
like,
game.
Oh.
My goodness.
Or, you know, at least they won that game. But when they're losing to the Lakers without
They've
Anthony
slayed
Davis,
the dragon.
the Utah
game was wild.
They're building up the Lakers. Like, oh, this is the Lakers. They're just too good. They're just amazing. What can you do? It's unfair. LeBron James. And yeah, LeBron was great. But that Laker team, very depleted, as Slater is saying. That's a winnable game. And yeah, they're going to lose some games. Yeah, things won't go right. Yeah, it's a back-to-back. But it just was all the more frustrating to me to see this very poor performance and excused as though they were going up against, I don't know, the Lakers of the bubble as opposed to the
but
actual
some games
Lakers.
Are a bad matchup, though. And it's not because of Marc Gasol. It's because of athleticism and defense and like due to rebound, and you're playing a second unit that basically is saying we're not trying to compete at the highest level. So to me, the Utah game was a complete aberration, and they got hot from three, and Utah wasn't really bringing it and haven't been for a while. But you looked at that Laker team last night and thought, yeah, the Warriors should have beat them. Like, what, they never had an answer for Montrezl Harrell. They still don't have one.
And they were winning in the first quarter. And to quote Mark Jackson, they
but we
let
know
go
what
the
was
going to
happen. They were going to bring in that second unit, and we knew what was going to happen. That's what I don't understand. The shock.
Against LeBron,
you put Nico Mannion against LeBron, and you thought because Anthony Davis was out, it was going to be different. Like, I don't know.
Brad Wanamaker against LeBron would have changed that game.
Yeah. No, it wouldn't have.
I know.
I don't think
point.
They can. Yeah. They don't have nothing to do for Trez, right? Like, we've seen it. And Marc Gasol was a problem. And Marc Gasol's kind of, like, not that good anymore. Like, we're seeing Alex Caruso.
Can I tell you an issue that this team has? Because you're saying they don't have an answer for Montrezl Harrell. First of all, remember early in the season when we were talking about Eric Paschal? It's like, emerging into a potential Montrezl Harrell, that has fallen off a cliff.
That's
number
that's
one.
Not there. That's not there.
Number two, Kevon Looney's not playing well at all right now. He hasn't made a shot since the All-Star break. He had there was a play in the first 2 minutes last night that he got on a dive wide open, and only Dennis Schroeder was there, and he stopped at the rim with Dennis Schroeder guarding him in the post, a point guard, a small point guard, and double pump faked and then shot a layup over the rim. James Wiseman's gonna get cooked by Montrezl Harrell. It's a quick twitch, high energy big who killed James Wiseman on defense last night. But the problem is, if you assume you're trying to win the game, and like, look, zooming out, it doesn't really matter. But if we're really talking about like this version of the Warriors trying to beat that version of the Lakers, Kevon Looney would play over Wiseman because Wiseman can't guard Harrell. But Kevon Looney's not playing well to the point that Wiseman comes in.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know about all this. Look, I agree that Looney not playing well, not a good performance last night. Looney was -3 in his minutes. I don't necessarily think what happened was about Kevon Looney. It was a lot more Wiseman.
No, for sure. But the point is, you can't go to Looney
you
and
can't
then expect
be -3 while in Looney's minutes. That's the problem. You can't be minus only, in Looney's minutes.
Not only that, they would have been +5 if Looney had made 4 absolutely wide open, like layups. He crashed into LeBron on an easy slip. Like, the problem is your veteran center's not playing well. Your rookie center's not playing well defensively. Your veteran center is not playing.
Smiley Geach +1.
There you go.
Smiley Geach hit like a floater, right?
Smiley Geach was instantly getting scored on the second his feet touched the floor. I agree with you overall about how they have an issue at center, and Looney not performing is a big problem for them. I agree with it. It just seems like that's not Looney isn't the guy I would pin most of the blame for what happened on.
I'm not trying to. It's more like Looney and Draymond Green did not make one shot last night. Neither of them.
And Wiggins didn't make a shot till the game was over. Right.
Yeah, then like, he made a bunch of them. Then he made a bunch of them. Then
well, he made that three at the end of the half.
There you
it was
go.
Like
there
a
you
bomb,
go.
But
the game was over by then.
Yeah.
Well, here's the problem is a starting lineup with Draymond and Looney. It just is. I mean, even if the starting lineup does okay, which it mostly did, at least early on last night, it just puts so much pressure on Steph to score. Unless Wiggins is scoring, and we don't have to debate on Wiggins anymore. You just can't assume you're going to get those points. And if Steph is not scoring, you know, he scored fine last night, but it still wasn't enough. Looney and Draymond together in a unit is tough. It's so tough that Kerr doesn't put Looney back in halves, by the way. He only gets that one stint to start the first quarter, start the third quarter, and now Paschal's getting those minutes. But Paschal's struggling almost as much. And that's their issue. They don't have someone who can kind of combine with Looney, combine with Draymond, combine with Paschal. They're all like screw up the other person. The one person who could theoretically not screw everyone else up is Wiseman, and he has terrible games sometimes. So that's a problem. They just don't have that other guy. They could so use just somebody who can give them 15 minutes
of shooting and some defense in a big position, and they don't have that, and that screws them up. Those
Marquise
combinations
Chris
are
would
all
help.
Bad. Marquise Chris is a loss. There's no question. I mean, he's a replacement level center, no question. But they don't even have a replacement level center.
He'd be starting.
And that
though.
Is a loss.
He'd
oh, no starting. Question. No question. No question. No question.
Looney'd probably be getting DMPs right now.
He might get the end of the half minutes if he's playing well, and if he's not, yeah, then he's out and someone else is in there.
Yeah, Ethan, what has happened to the what was it called? The Looney what? Looney Resurrection.
Looney Lane.
Looney is the plus minus god compared to these other guys on the team. I don't know what you guys are talking about. I'm not singling Looney out. I think Looney's got his flaws. I think Looney's not somebody you want to depend on, certainly, but I think that's not the source of the issues. A lot more went wrong than just Looney. I think, and it seems like the bar for Looney, guys, the bar for Looney's too high. That's what I'm saying. He has a bad game or two.
Make a two-footer. Make a two-footer's too high.
Man. He needs a nine-foot rim. Is that what you're saying? It's too high? 10 is too high?
He has Mikey Moore-esque efficiency, people. Come on. Remember when Fitz was talking about that back in the day, by the way? The percentage conversion?
I do think it's a problem, though, when, like Tim is saying, like, they just, I don't care how great a defense you have to score. You simply have to score. And especially when that second unit is going to put you back in the hole, then you gotta make up the hole. And especially against the Lakers, who seem to just, like, have the Warriors playbook. They know all, they were fine with all
LeBron
that off the court movement. Yeah, LeBron, exactly. They were fine with all that. Steph gets double pass it, and then it's Looney, and they're fine with it. They're ready for it. And Looney can't convert. Not being able to convert against Schroeder is a problem. That you just can't not, like, I understand Steve's defensive, you know, defense first issue, but it doesn't matter. Some of these teams you're not shutting down, you have to score. They beat Utah because they scored. And it's tough, man, when you got two guys who are just not – Draymond just decided he wasn't going to shoot that game. Like, he made that decision, and he wasn't shooting. And then Looney can't shoot. And then Wiggins was doing his Wiggins thing. So,
and Oubre's not playing particularly well. Since
and Oubre's in a struggle, right?
Yeah,
struggle.
I think Oubre doesn't look right.
Oubre, some of his wrists. You see his free throws? Yeah, it's just
– He airballed a free throw and then started flexing his wrist. I think it was in L.A. against the Clippers. I think – a problem is, you know, remember, so they put Wiseman in the middle of the first quarter, and immediately it was like, whoa, there's some offensive burst on this team, right? He had that, like, soaring lefty layup. I think he had a putback over Harrell, and you're like, yeah, like, he just turbocharges the offense if he's being used correctly. But the problem then becomes what happens the next 30 minutes defensively to James Wiseman. And I understand, like, just, like, the teenage factor here, you know, the big man is probably the toughest defensive position in the league considering all the coverages, and just, like, you know, you're supposed to be the eyes and ears of the defense on the back line, and he just can't be that at his age. But that's kind of the issue of the team right now, is, like, he is the offensive answer to this team, but he's worse defensively than I thought he was going to be.
I like what they did against Utah with having him switch so often, and it didn't even work out well in the second half, but at least it's simple, right? And he'll pick up fouls, and it won't always go well, but it seems like just going switch heavy, almost using him like he's a giant guard, because he does, I think, in many ways have the mobility of a perimeter player. That might be a mitigator, because it's just, you can't expect him at this age and with his awareness to be able to be that back line, that linebacker for the defense. So maybe that's something that they could potentially try. But it also seems like with him, if he picks up a few fouls, it goes downhill.
I was saying that last night on the postgamer. It's like he just starts planking everything. He's so afraid to foul. And then it, like, seeps into the rest of his game. He gets, like, worse on offense when he's in foul trouble too. He becomes so hesitant, to the point it's like, dude, if you, and he ends up fouling out anyways, which is funny, but it's like, just go foul out. You know what I mean? Like, play, even if you got five fouls, play like you got zero, essentially. Because I just feel like they need to just get this physical aggression more with him. He's better when he's, like, free and aggressive and not thinking. You could tell when he starts overthinking, and then he gets in his head, and then he's slumping his shoulders, and then it snowballs. Bad games with him snowball quickly.
What is the deal with how he comes into the Clipper game in garbage time and he's snatching every rebound like he's the jaws of life?
He actually was good rebounding in the first.
He had a rebound putback. I think he had like maybe.
He's been better at that. He's been better at that. But the Lakers
but then
just had a
go south, right? Yeah.
It becomes seal flippers out of nowhere, and I just don't understand. I think it sometimes. I really think it's a focus thing because he had one in the garbage-ish time where he had one hand on it and he closed his hands and he just flicked it out of bounds accidentally. And I think that's not even bad hands. I think that's probably focus. And we are being critical because this is one of his worst games, but
well, he's important. The problem is he's important to this team.
When also,
I'm overall optimistic on
even him. When he's really bad, he's one of their better players. Let's put it honestly. Like, you know, they don't have other options. He's better than Eric Paschal right now. Again, he can be worse for minutes. There's no question. But you can't go like, oh, my God, you should have played Eric Paschal over him. Or you should have played, Smiley Geach over him. Like, they just don't have anyone
else.
He's
their offensive answer, too. I mean, exactly. He seems to me like he could be a 20-point-per-game scorer in a couple seasons. Like, but the problem is the defense.
We're all fairly positive on him, I think, overall. And I think the LaMelo conversation has skewed the perspective of what he's been able to do. I mean, I'm a Wiseman optimist, to be clear. The issue is just the dearth of depth on the team, competent offensive players, what is expected of him exceeds what he can actually do. I mean, this is the situation, and it's less about he's pretty much, I think, where he should be. It's just that they need more from him right now.
Yeah, here's one my radical solution to some of this. I mean, they're playing him and Paschal in the second unit. They've tried him and JTA. Vic Kerr clearly doesn't like that, and I can understand that. JTA is kind of falling off too. What about just him, Oubre, Bazemore, and two guards? Like, why even try to play a power forward?
Bazemore was a struggle too, by the way.
He's a struggle. Oh, but
that was a bad Bazemore.
No question. He's bouncing it off his foot and all that. But if you just kind of put wings around Wiseman, I think you might get more than putting Paschal next to him. Because
I say pool three wings, Wiseman. That's one. You say two guards.
Yeah, I think they're good. But they're going to stick. Nico. You know they're going to stick with Nico. So in that construction, I said, why don't you just pull Paschal out and put Bazemore in there? And just see what you can do with wings. And Oubre plays the power forwards. There's not that many backup power forwards that you need to match him up against that are just super dangerous. And just kind of spread the floor and see what happens. I'm rough on Paschal because I don't see where the combinations are bad. We've said this. He's not great with Wiseman. He's not great with Draymond. He's a disaster with Looney. So it's got to be Paschal by himself. Well, if you're playing Wiseman, it can't be Paschal by himself as a center. So take him out of there and go small with Wiseman. I think that might be a little more activity.
I agree with that.
I have a rotation idea that Ethan won't like.
I want to hear it. Let's hear it.
Start Wiseman. Bring Paschal in for him.
Yes.
Start Wiseman in the second quarter. And if you want to go small late, bring Paschal in for him. DNP.
That's
come on, Looney.
Looney just DNP. Ethan, your response.
Well, just like, what matters?
I'm with you, Slater.
I can't make too many excuses for Looney after the All-Star break. I don't know what happened. He was playing pretty well, in my opinion, before the break. He's been bad sometimes. That's just how it's going to work on this team. If you're playing bad, you lose your spot. I actually don't have much pushback against what Slater is saying because they do need to shake something up. I do wonder, is Damian Lee, does Kerr just have the unrelenting hate and high expectations for Lee that Slater has for Looney? What's the deal? What's the deal with this?
He's done with Damian Lee. That's very clear.
I mean, like, he's not a perfect player. He has his flaws, but when you look at the other guys
on
the
play.
Team,
yeah, and he's an option offensively. And yes,
well, when we talk about the three wings in the second unit, like that, he's a second unit fit. He has a nice little relationship with Wiseman. You know, I see them talking on the bench a lot. I thought last night, remember Lee did get like some spot minutes in the fourth last night when that wasn't going well for the second unit. He immediately hit a three, and then him and Wiseman were near somebody on the Lakers inside. I can't remember who, and it was a foul was called, and he was like, that's my foul, because he was not trying to get Wiseman the foul. I like him in that unit with Wiseman, and I mean, look, it's hard to tell from afar, but Wiseman seems to like him.
By the way, did you catch LeBron mocking Paschal? Did anybody else catch that? Just taunting him, and you could hear it on the hot mic saying, that's all he does. He drops his shoulder, you know, every time. Oh, and look, he's mad now. He's mad now after the ref called it. And I wondered, because Pascal, remember, scored on LeBron and had a very nice play last season. I wondered if LeBron was possibly that petty because he dunked on him. The footage has been deleted, though.
So my thing with Looney is, you know, what is he long-term for this team, right, into the future? He's a backup situational center, right? So I would just make him that. Where, like, you know what? If you start James Wiseman, he's going to get in foul trouble plenty. Like, there's going to be chances to put Looney in there. Two things you do. You lean heavier into the youth movement by giving Wiseman a starting spot and more minutes, and Pascal more minutes. But also, you save Looney's body a little bit. You don't play him every night. And then he comes in when needed, situationally, when Wiseman's in foul trouble.
Utility player. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You know what's killing Looney? Is that Draymond isn't scoring. So you can't play them together. It just kills the offense when those two guys are on the court together. If Draymond was scoring 11 a game, which I know seems almost impossible to imagine if that were to happen again, but let's say he was scoring 11 a game, then Looney, you could play Looney, because it just would, there would be a balance on the court. With Draymond not even shooting, and then you have another guy that the defense doesn't have to cover, it's just too much. Against a good defense, it's just too much. So Looney's play has declined, there's no question. But what really kills him, kills his minutes with the Warriors, is Draymond not scoring with him, and you just can't do it. And I'll say the same thing for Pascal. It hurts having, you know, Draymond not shooting, and you have Pascal, because Pascal will shoot it. He's just going to miss most of the time, and he can't get you the kind of baskets you need when you have an offense that has Draymond on the floor. It's just a different, you know, it's a different mix for them right now when Draymond doesn't shoot. And then, you know, when he shoots a little bit, you look, things open up, if, of course, especially if he makes them. But the moment is, he's just not going to shoot very much. And that kind of changes the mix of, and that's, again, why Wiseman's so important, because Wiseman will shoot. Wiseman will threaten the basket. Sometimes it won't be
too
good.
Too much, by the
way. Yeah, maybe. But, you know, at some point, you kind of need someone to also put it up. Yeah, I mean, they need him moving. They need him in motion. They don't need him set. Clearly, as he has trouble, like, absorbing contact on those post plays, and it goes wrong. But
I mean, THT is pushing him off his spot.
I'm just like, Draymond averaged 22 points a game in a Western Conference Finals. Does that even seem like it happened?
By the way, like, it wasn't even like 5 years ago.
I mean, I think in 2019 he might have averaged 16.5 a game, but still. I mean, yeah, that's a good observation from Tim, that we're looking at Looney, we're looking at Pascal, but their games have not declined nearly as much as Draymond's offensive game has. And maybe that's injuries, maybe that's, I don't know, but it's putting the Warriors in quite the spot. People wonder, oh, why don't they have Steph on the ball? Does Steve Kerr hate pick and roll? And there's this element of it where the defense knows where to load up if you're doing pick and roll, and where to sag off with the Warriors' mediocre shooting. And that's one of the reasons why they're so heavy with Steph off ball running around, because then Draymond's guy actually has to sit close to him. Otherwise, there's going to be an off-ball screen and Steph curls around it. So it's impacting everything. You know, to get what they need out of Draymond defensively, they're making more and more concessions offensively.
And every Steph minute was with Draymond.
I don't even think it's injury. He's deciding not, like, when he decides not to shoot, and that's part of it. Like, he's got to be okay with the 3-for-11 game, because he misses a couple and then he just stops shooting, and that's worse than him on 3-for-11. He took 3 shots last game. That was like his fewest since like last month, like February 6th against Dallas or something like that. Like, he's got to take the shots. He just has to. He's got to do it a few times a game where he goes coast to coast. And sure, you probably prefer to make them. But it's even worse when you just know he's driving down the lane. He's got an open shot, and he's trying to force like dump off passes in traffic. They're waiting for, especially LeBron and
the defense
knows.
Oh yeah, the defense knows.
They're waiting for it. He's better off just going in and trying to dunk on everybody every time. Like, so last game he just decided he wasn't gonna shoot. So just still shoot it, because you gotta guard it. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's where he's gotta swallow his pride and be okay with missing shots and keep taking them, because it's causing problems when he doesn't even decide to shoot. If you're Montrezl Harrell, you just like, whatever. There's no chance that he can get high to make a couple, right? There's no chance if he don't shoot. Now, if he make one, it's like, let me not let Draymond get off.
That's what happened in the Utah game, right?
Absolutely.
Remember the first half, what he scored, 11 in the first half?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
You got to guard him. That's not injury. That's just him not – I think it's him not wanting to be 2-for-11, right, and having everybody saying, he can't – I don't know why he just decides that, but he hadn't done that in a while.
Well, if he's worried about his shooting percentages, you know, he's not saving them right now.
Hey, can we get some, by the way, can we get some more Jordan Poole? I mean, that's another thing.
Can we get some Jordan Poole at point, man? Steve got to let this defense go. Like, come on, let it go.
Well, no, it's not helping the defense because you got Nico Mannion on the floor.
Yes, absolutely.
He's terrible. He is not an NBA defensive player. He is not.
He's a pest.
He is not an NBA defensive player. And so you're putting...
He kept trying to steal inbounds and try to, I don't know, get...
T.J. McConnell?
He knows. Yeah,
At one point, he almost forced the LeBron travel, though. He, like, jumped...
He locked up LeBron for, like, four seconds.
And then LeBron almost put him into the basket.
I like Poole at point just because, like, he needs to... Like, you want him to have the ball in his hands. And to be honest, in that second unit, who do you trust more with the ball in their hands? I don't know why they're posting up James Wiseman like it ever works. Like, just put the ball in Poole's hands.
One thing to say about the James Wiseman post-ups is I don't think those are being called from the sideline. I think James Wiseman is thirsty for the post-up.
I don't know, bro. I'm watching the ball whip around.
James Wiseman is sitting there going, over here, over here, over here.
You're telling me that they're listening to Wiseman?
Yeah, well, they're seeing him.
Sometimes we act like the coaches control all five players' brains. Like, these guys, like, it's basketball. They kind of, you know, they probably, Steve Kerr needs to do a better job of getting them in sets and, like, hey, pick and roll, like, hammer that in their brain for sure. But sometimes it's just James Wiseman saying, I want to post up.
And he's setting up. He's giving him the entry pass, so they do it. They do it with Looney sometimes, right? I mean, that's what I go crazy. Like, why are you passing it to Looney? If you at least pass it to Wiseman, he might score. Obviously, Marcus tweeted out the stats. It's not good on post-ups. But there's the threat of it, of one dribble dunk sometimes. With Looney, but that's NBA. It's like they're going to get the ball to the big guy if they think he's got some kind, or at least get things moving to try to move the defense.
If he's got a size advantage at all, they're going to throw it to him. Yeah.
That's what they do. That's just what
there was a post-up where he ran down and they literally reversed it, but they did the thing where it was a literal play where they start on one side, on the strong side, reverse it to the weak side where he's posting, and got on the ball. Like, that was a play. And I get it. I'm not saying don't give him a play, but give him a face-up play. Don't give him a back-to-the-basket play. Like,
I agree with Slater. He goes down there, and he's working the position, and then he calls for it. And they're like, well, he's calling for it.
Why is he doing that, though? But why
it's just what big men are taught to do it.
Because he scored 35 a game in high school, and he thinks
I don't know if that's high school.
Obviously this isn't high school, but his brain believes it's possible.
No, I'm saying they're telling him that. I'm saying
you're saying they're telling him post up four times a game. It's going very well. The analytics are terrific.
You're telling him James Wiseman. You're telling me that 19-year-old is running sets that they didn't tell him. They didn't teach him. He's just going against the offense.
Stuff happens semi transition. Not every play is not every play is called. And I'm with Slater that big men retreat to what they know. They retreat to the paint. I just think he's mostly retreating what he knows. But I still want to stay on this Jordan Poole thing because, look, we are coming off this terrible loss. But if you were to say they're going to split the two games between the Jazz and the Lakers, you would say ultimately good outcome. And this Jordan Poole development, I believe, is potentially very meaningful for the team. And it's an opportunity for Slater to take a victory lap. And I think that's getting obscured in this whole pile-on that we're doing in the aftermath of this Laker game. This guy's got some scary skills, man. I mean, I don't know what it's going to be. I don't know how consistent it's going to be. I don't think anybody can know that. But, I mean, it looks like after the first few months where he didn't even seem like an NBA player, it looks like Bob Myers hit on this draft pick. I mean, this guy's talented.
Yeah, he can get to the basket. He can hit some deep threes. He can air ball, too. But you accept that when he's making others. And no question, there is a talent there. There is an NBA talent there. There is an NBA rotational talent there. But it's showing. He's getting more minutes. He's jumped over a bunch of people. And now it's a matter of putting him in the right mix. What do you want around him? What do you need around him? and they got to figure that. I don't think they've got a lot, you know, some of the stuff they just don't have. But, you know, he's jumped over Mulder. He's jumped over Damian Lee. You can't say that, you know, the coaching staff hasn't reacted to it. They've moved him in the position, and now we'll see how it goes. Obviously, there's going to be some defensive problems when you have Nico Mannion and Jordan Poole as your defensive backcourt, but they got to kind of figure some of those things out. But, yeah, Slater called this one long ago. Let's give him his props. This Jordan Poole is going to be in the rotation for the rest. He has to be in the rotation for the rest. I was like, he scored that before he left for the G League. He went off, right? I was like, whoa, who is this? Yeah, who is this guy? And, like, you know, this can't be who he is now, right? Well, you know what? It is kind of who he is now. He took it to the G League, and he's brought it to the games after the break. And even if there are some bumpy things and there are some mistakes, you could see where this is headed, and it's and he's also better than what, and he's better than Michael Mulder. He is better than Michael Mulder. That's not a question, and we'll see where this is headed. It's moving in an upward direction, no doubt. And it's let's see what they do with him. I don't know if he's a starter in the NBA, but I think he is for sure.
He's
that,
a bench
that nice combo, yeah, that combo backup guard in that second unit, or maybe even, you know, you play him with Steph sometimes, which they've done a little bit, and you see what happens.
We will be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
They closed with him against the Utah Jazz, and he hit a mega three that was needed with like 3 minutes left.
And hasn't been embarrassing on defense, you know. And I'm sure he's not been great, but he hasn't been embarrassing.
And that has been noted behind the scenes, by the way, is that he's getting better defensively. This is a test for Steve Kerr, because this is not his usual type of guard that he hands the keys to on the back second
unit.
No,
you don't say.
And like the whole Mannion thing is like, maybe he's given Poole the minute, these developmental minutes that Poole has clearly earned, but he's also saying, well, time to Mannion. And I think Poole generally seems to be okay with that, because they played a lot together in the G League, and apparently they're very friendly behind the scenes. But the one thing, again, and I said, I know this has been noted behind the scenes, is he's doing stuff that Kerr also likes in the last few games, which is like, he's making, sometimes he gets it in the corner, and even though it could be a chuck or an attack, sometimes it's the extra pass. And it's patience. He doesn't come in the game. You'll notice he doesn't come in the game and immediately shoot.
Yeah. It's not frantic. It's not
yes.
frantic. Yep.
And that's purposeful. That's like, hey, I'm playing the team game. Now, then there are four or five straight possessions where he'll go to work. Sometimes it's when, like, man, they need some offense, and then he's chucking. He got fouled, by the way, on 2 3-pointers last night. I think he's gotten fouled on 3 3-pointers the last couple of games. I don't know if that's something he's good at, or it was just random. Like, Alphonso McKinney just, like, ran into him. But he's starting to become a better team player, along with the skill that Ethan's talking about.
Yeah, skill, I mean, you see something new every game. Last night, Euro step into his offhand. That's not something every guy does and looks completely comfortable. I mean, guys will Euro step, but not necessarily to their left hand and finish very comfortably. And he just does stuff like that, whether it's Sham God. And then you throw in the shooting ability, which was not there last season. And
did he change his form? It looks a little bit more Damian Lillard-ish, right? It's a little off the shoulder too.
He's a bit stronger. That's the main thing. He's like been in the weight room a lot.
The cojones, though, to just go in there and...
He always had that, though.
I mean, but I think he missed his first two threes in the game before, and then off a DHO deep three, just slings it, drains it.
He takes deep ones. And, you know, he airballs them, too, once in a while, but he takes deep ones.
He has not been fazed by misses at all as an NBA player.
And he had a lot of opportunities not to be fazed last season.
I love what he does. I love when he sets up not right behind the three-point line, but the defense forgets about him because he's 4 or 5 feet back there, and he shoots it like a regular three-pointer. I know that hasn't been what Kerr teams tend to do, but that off-the-catch 28 to 31 foot shot, I think, is a tremendous asset to the offense potentially.
And they need it. Oh, they need it. Oh, they need it so much.
I think the part that they're kind of not using, which is like why I want to see the ball in his hands, is his creation. Like they need somebody to get into the paint.
He could like, also turn it over, but he could pass.
He can get in there and make a play. He's, man, his first step has gotten so dramatically better, and his ability to attack from triple threat is like way better. Like you could tell they were working on that. Like Chris Weems and him like were working on that because he gets the ball, especially from like a wing where it's in play. It's one move and he's in the paint. That I feel like they could probably use that more, which is why I want to see more of him at the point, just because he's got more opportunities to do that. But that's kind of what they need with that second unit, something that could collapse the defense. I think that's why they post. They always post with the second unit because sometimes it's Wiggins, sometimes it's whoever, but because they need something to draw the defense to set up the kick out. They just don't have those type of players.
They need to move the defense. Who moves the defense? Who moves the defense? How do they move the defense? And Jordan Poole can move the defense. I think that he can make a play, make a drive. Things change, you know, because they don't have the individual scores clearly on that second unit. Well, they don't have any of them other than Steph and sometimes Andrew Wiggins. But Jordan Poole has some of that. Yeah, that's what we're saying. Like this, there's something different here, and you accept some of the limitations, which there clearly still are, but he finally looks like a first rounder. That's what he looks like now. He looks like, again, a late first rounder. We know they're all tough, but he finally looks like a guy. Okay, that's a first round draft pick. There's something here to develop. And again, like I said about Wiseman, he's also better than most of the rest of the players that they got.
So yeah, just more talented, right?
Yeah, you got to play him.
Look, we're not getting off this subject until we recognize that Nico Mannion is 7 for his last 15 from three.
There you go. Well, he's a shooter.
Why you talk about his defense, baby? 7 for 15 from three, Slater. What?
That matters. That is
it does.
Deciding skill for Nico Mannion's career.
He's a polarizing player, by the way. There are people who are in the NBA who say, not an NBA player to me, not an NBA player. And then there are people who really like him, especially around the Warriors. People with Santa Cruz, for instance, were really impressed with just how he goes about his business, with how fierce a competitor he is, and say, I buy him. I buy him making it. So I'm fairly agnostic. I think it was a fine draft choice at the position it was, but he's polarizing off the bat right now.
Did you hear what Chris was saying when they were asking him about it, you know, Nico's defense? And he said, you know what, he's got to do some of those things that Steph does. Did you hear that? Like, you know, switch off when it gets down to the post, just stay away from those matches. I go, whoa, okay. I thought the conversation was always supposed to be about how Steph's defense is better than you thought it was, but that's what makes Marquise really good on the air. He was,
yeah, right. He's going
to
tell
you. Like, he makes points. Like, whoa, like, okay, yeah, he does have to do the things that Steph does because Steph doesn't guard the most dynamic offensive player ever. He just doesn't do it. It's smart. He's really good on the help side. He's really good in thinking it through. But when somebody goes down to the post who's dangerous, Steph gets off of him, and Draymond makes sure that someone else is on him. And they will really have to do that with Manny. They will really have to do that with Manny.
His defensive rating for March is 120.
Yeah.
If they're doing a redraft of 2019, is Poole a lottery pick?
I don't know about
I gotta go,
I don't know.
I got to go back and look through the yeah, I got to look back through
I say
that.
Yes.
I'm not sure.
I say yes. Yeah. Looking at it.
John Hollinger literally just did this and he wasn't in his top 20, but that was before, you know, Poole has come back. But I don't know that I'm there yet, but if I was projecting, I would say that will be an opinion soon, but I've obviously been, you know, high on him the last few weeks that like, hey,
all
get,
I'm saying is Ethan has jumped off the Looney and onto the Jordan Poole thing.
No, he's on the, he's actually, he's on Ethan the, Ethan, he's decision. On the, Ethan's on the Slater bandwagon. It's like, well, let's not talk about Poole here. Let's talk about what Slater said about Poole. That's what we got to go here.
Slater did call it. Slaystradamus in this instance said that they should bring him up and have him helm the second unit, and it is come to fruition, and we almost, just because of the timing of the podcast, I don't think that we really gave him his just due, and really I shouldn't be extending it to him considering he's trying to end Kevon Looney's career viciously.
No, I'm trying
repeatedly
to turn Kevon Looney into what he should be for this team. What Kevon Looney probably is like, why am I not there for this team? You know what I mean? If they're actually a title team next year, Kevon Looney's a backup.
He might be closing halves, like they kind of like that. But,
in the right matchup, yeah, on the right night. And, you know, he's sporadically used.
You see this note from our producer here, Brian Smith. Ethan is out of the Looney lane and jumped into the pool. There you go, Brian. You got your 15 minutes, 15 seconds.
Slater, who loves Wiseman so much, training the sniper fire immediately on poor Looney after Wiseman was clearly what was wrong.
Well, I'll say one thing. You know what this season's doing is it's really outlining what they need, like what positional players they need. And I'll say right now, I mean, at center, we're going to just assume you need growth out of Wiseman. They need a really good athletic backup power forward. They really need that because... I mean, Pascal is not that. They're trying to force it. It's not that. He's something other. He's unique.
Jonathan Kuminga.
Exactly. Like, a 6'7", 6'8", strong, can play some four, can defend fours, can hit threes. Like, that's, and doesn't have to be great at it, just has to do it. If they had that player, they would be a lot better. And maybe that guy can, you know, run on the break and get some buckets that way. But, a 3-and-D young dynamic backup power forward, that would help them. Now, we could also talk about, you know, what Jordan Poole's role is, maybe a backup one, a defensive backup one, a Sean Livingston type to play with Poole in the second unit. That's another one I would say. But I, if you, what would really improve this team more than anything, other than a superstar at any position, of course, would be a dynamic, lengthy backup power forward who can hit threes. It would be huge for them.
Those are pricey.
Yeah, well, you got this in draft. Maybe you get one in the draft. That's where you. This,
I'm seeing, yeah. Kuminga and Jalen Green. I'm seeing are in the 4 to 5 range right, yeah, there. That's,
you know,
that's tantalizing.
How about if they get like the 13th and take Kispert? How about that one? Not wouldn't be the athletic side, but he could play power forward and he could hit everything on the outside. Like that kind of player, that kind of player would not be terrible for them.
I thought Justinian Jessup was the answer to all of this.
Who's to say he's not?
Come on, Ethan. We need you to keep pounding those drums.
They just sent a guy over there to start watching him out there. I know Warriors fans were getting angry about that, and I was just thinking, you do know that we're playing, this is basketball in coronavirus times. It's not just so easy to send people off to Australia and have them come back currently. It looks like they like how Jessup's progressing, and that's such a, Gorgon's such a respected coach, maybe the most respected in Australia, so... If it really is about next season, I think they're making a bet that it's better to have Jessup down under than up here, even if there is a need for a shooter. So we shall see. We shall see on Jessup. That's the next season. But that's what this Warriors team is shaping up to be, I think, is an incredibly exciting team next season. Yep. That's what they are.
Yeah, you can just use this season to kind of spotlight what they need and what the players who won't be part of that next season.
Or yeah, they also need to figure out what they have, yeah, too, right? Exactly. Which is like, that's what these Mannion Poole minutes are. That's what the Wiseman minutes are. And they're not going to be great. And, you know, I am curious to see them against not terrific second units. Like, you know, their first two games have been against Rudy Gobert, Mike Conley, and Jordan Clarkson.
Right,
last
right.
Night it was,
yeah,
that's LeBron, Harrell, and Kuzma. I'm ready to see them against the Houston Rockets second unit, which the Houston Rockets' entire team is a second unit.
Yeah, we
right
couldn't
now
even name their second unit. Yeah. I couldn't even
and then
figure
the,
out who
and then
be
the Grizzlies, you know, and I do want to see them against, you know, players that are more to their level, particularly from an age standpoint. I mean, they're playing some veterans the last couple of games.
Well, it's just, you put LeBron out there, it's like, you forget about it. Just for, you know, like it's, you're just going to have to try to hold on for your lives when you got LeBron going against the Warriors second unit right now. It's tough. It's tough.
They're going to lose those pockets plenty, and like fans are going to grumble that why they're on the court, but like, they've got to be on the court. Now, we can gripe about the mix. I've said I don't know that it needs to be Mannion and Poole, and it could be just Poole, but like, that's just they have to play. They have to play. They need to know what they have.
And it's not like they have other people who they could put in there. You go, oh, that'll fix it. Get Brad Wanamaker. Get Brad Wanamaker back in there. That'd be great.
They would have lost those minutes last night with their previous second unit.
Yes, like, no question. This is a sort out season, and that's, you know, 20-20 in a sort out season with a possibility with a much easier schedule coming in to end up slightly above 500. You know, in that 9-8-7, you know, rung, play a play-in game, see what happens. And, you know, maybe you understand your roster a little bit better and you know exactly what you need for next season. It's not exciting for fans. They want, you know, and I understand that. They want wins. They want dynamic play. They want to see Steph, you know, in the playoffs, deep run. But that's not the roster that they have right now. If they can get something out of, you know, figure out what Wiseman is, get him you know, leveled off for next season, figure out what else you need, figure out what you have, and win more than you lose, that's probably a pretty good season for them.
Yeah, and they're using Wiseman differently. I mean, I know we're griping about the post-ups, but he's not doing as much of that hang around the perimeter, back to the basket, 20 feet from the basket, looking to do off-ball screens. It does appear that they've simplified things, especially with that second unit. It's all about the pick and roll. So I think, and I wrote this, as much as we're looking at how the Warriors' youth are adjusting, I think we're also seeing the organization adjust to them, because this is not an organization that is used to this kind of thing. They haven't really had talent to develop until right now. So I think it's a process for everybody, not just the players, but for everybody else.
No question. I think the two people who matter most from a patience standpoint, who have to maintain the most patience, are going to end up being Steph Curry and Draymond Green. This is not going to be a particularly fun second half. Now, Amy, look, the schedule softens up. They're going to get wins. Like the Jazz win, it felt like, woo, these two errors are kind of mixing in this game, and it is working pretty decently. And when Wiseman is used as a tool, it's a fun tool, I'm sure, for them to have this like just dunk machine at center that they haven't had. So there will be moments where it'll probably feel fine, but there are also going to be times like last night where Steph Curry and Draymond Green just go through a tough first quarter, and they're down three to the Lakers. They want this win, and then they just for the next 6 minutes go, well,
and
we
that's
saw.
Ball game.
We lost
yeah,
a game.
That's ball game. Yeah.
I want to preach some patience in general too, just because I think we lose sight of how long this stuff tends to take, and there is a temptation to be prisoner of the moment. But we can look to Jordan Poole and what he was last season.
He's 21 season. Still, and it felt like we've already gave up on him, and now it's like, is he a sixth man of the year in 3 years?
But it didn't help that he was following Jacob Evans.
What, big shoes to fill there? Big shoes to fill with Jacob Evans.
He's like, we're done with these 28 picks.
Everybody's dreaming on Bradley Beal, and for good reason. He's an excellent player, but it took him until his fifth season until he was an efficient scorer. And look, the Warriors don't have that much time to wait around, but I do think, especially when we look at Wiseman and we look at what some of the star bigs who we can find as similarities, maybe you want to say Bosch, maybe you want to say Garnett, whatever, these guys were not contributing to wins early in their career. Frankly, neither was Kevin Durant. I mean, I remember when people were writing about how Kevin Durant had horrific plus minus and what this might mean.
His rookie season was terrible.
Horrendous.
So that's what we're looking at.
Defensively and efficiency was terrible. NBA person made this point to me very specifically. I wrote about it a little bit, but she said, look at DeAndre Ayton. How good did you think he was as a rookie? I didn't think he was any good at all because, yeah, I thought he was a bust. He was lost out there. He put up some numbers, but he didn't do anything to help the team win. Well, was DeAndre Ayton like it last season? He was hurt mostly, but he didn't do much. What is DeAndre Ayton now at 22 years old? He's something on a good team. Again, the statistics are whatever, but you can just tell he's something. He goes, that's Wiseman. He goes, not the same player, but can you see that? If you see that growth for James Wiseman, he's going to be a hell of a player, and he's more talented than DeAndre Ayton. He is more talented than DeAndre Ayton. It does kind of take you back, say, that's three seasons. It hasn't felt like three seasons for Ayton, but it is three seasons for Ayton. And it might take, you know, maybe a little quicker for Wiseman because he's more talented and he's potentially on a better team. But that one really hit me. Like, okay, I don't think of them as comparable at all, but they are comparable because they came into the NBA with very little experience. They're plopped into it, and much is expected. Everybody's looking at them. Luka Doncic was taken after you, Ayton. Look at that, Luka Doncic. And in a version of that is Wiseman with LaMelo Ball. And yet, okay, he's 22. He's still super young. And Ayton, you're not saying Ayton's a bust. You're saying Ayton's something that you really want. And Wiseman might be that at 21, 22, which is a ways from now. I just think it's a better way to look at it than the hyper now, bust, great bust, terrible. Okay, like this stuff has a progression, and we have to analyze it on the run, but it's not how it's decided. It's decided over the long term.
I was going to say the argument some would make is, well, that doesn't fit Steph Curry's timeline. And you know what? That may end up being the case. And I think there might be a reckoning this summer where if a superstar becomes available that's in that Bradley Beal range, it's like maybe they do need to decide, like, do they mortgage to fuse the eras better? But this idea that they're currently denying that reality, there's not a superstar on the table. You know, who is the most available best player at the trade deadline? Like, Victor Oladipo, who's shooting 38% right now. Kyle Lowry. I mean, like, Bradley Beal is not available. Like, Washington is not trading him right now. That's just a fact. Like, so people can have these, like, trades.
Harrison
scenarios.
Barnes, the superstar, not available.
Yeah. Well, he's more available. Put James Wiseman on the table. I think Harrison Barnes might be available.
And here's the other thing. I mean, they trade James Wiseman for a superstar, which I would approve, but who's your center then? It's Kevon Looney and Marquise Chris, and you're back in that circle.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could solve that in the summer.
It would be the Zaza Pachulia day, but, you know, it would be that thing.
It literally could be Zaza Pachulia, like literally you put on uniform.
But I think the general point, Tim, as you're talking about this like whole now thing, is like this is a summer decision. And guess what? You do reconstruct rosters in the summer and you do make big, bold decisions either to hold what you have or use what you have. But the thing is, that's not available right now. It's just not. It's just not.
That is essentially what Steph was saying. And, you know, the way he was talking about it is it kind of does fit his timeline, though. He's going to sign an extension. He plans to be with the Warriors for 4 or 5 more years. He would love a 4-year extension. So that puts him on a team 5 more years after this. So, yeah, Wiseman, if you follow the Ayton timeline, that's right in Steph's window. In his mind, he thinks I want to be playing for a title in, you know, year 2, year 3, year 4, year 5. So it does put him in that window. I think that people who are thinking about it, including myself, are thinking about it like Steph is balling right now, like maximize it right now. But even Steph is thinking, don't do anything that's going to make me be back in this situation in 4 years, right? And the moves that people want that would give them this 4-year window, they're just not there. Bradley, like, I mean, you can't say it better than that, Slater. Like, he's literally not available. Now, if these dudes pop up on some other team, right, some of these players are like, okay, now they're acquired by somebody else, then you kill the Warriors, right? But right now, they're just not on the table. And we don't know. We don't know if we find out the Wizards are like, yo, if you give us Wiseman, we do it, and the Warriors are saying no, then all right, I got you, but
then we can all debate whether that was a good decision.
Absolutely.
Just like, hey, you know, the Kevin Love, Klay Thompson thing, like that was obviously on the table. And in retrospect, it's wiser that they held Klay Thompson. That could have turned out differently, and we could all debate. And guess what? Steph's mind could change if suddenly Bob Myers comes to him this summer and goes, Philadelphia behind the scenes is talking to us about Joel Embiid. You know what I mean? Or something like that.
I don't think his mind would change at all. I think he'd take that right now. I think he's against doing the move. Like, you give up Wiseman a pick for a guy right now, and then that guy walks, and now you got nothing.
Because truly, right? Who is that right now? It's Kyle Lowry. Absolutely. It's Victor Oladipo. Yeah. Like,
that's what he's against. He's like, don't mortgage my future to win right now. Like, everybody knew. I think they all kind of knew when Klay went down, that was pretty much it. So how do you do the future thing? With that said, the question isn't, I don't think the question is so much Wiseman and stuff anymore. Like, yeah, you know, you'll have Wiseman, you have the picks to pedal. The question is those ancillary pieces, right? It's like, what do you do with Wiggins? What do you do with Oubre? Or are these guys keepers? Like, who do you keep? Who do you say? I think all that stuff is why, so I know Slater, you've been saying it, this stuff happens in the summer. It's why you got to decide it in the summer. Because it's not just, if you go get, like, Bradley Beal makes a lot of sense on this team, he'd be perfect. But if you lock up all these contracts and you got 5 max players and one of them is Wiggins, you got to have a conversation about that. Can you win a championship with Steph, Klay, Draymond, Beal, and Wiggins as your starting 5? But now if you say, yo, you can figure out what to do with Wiggins and get a center, all that is so much that has to be worked out that you just can't do it before a deadline. I actually think they might make a piece, like a little fill-in, like, I wouldn't be surprised if by the trade deadline they decide on Smiley Jeets or something, right? Like,
oh yeah, yeah.
That's a big one.
He could easily be thrown into a deal. So, you know,
absolutely. Yeah,
so
yeah.
Could Wanamaker.
He looks so forlorn now with the Castaway Island beard.
Who's got the Castaway Island beard?
Smiley.
Wilson, where are you, Wilson?
Does Smiley, he? I man. Missed. I got. Yeah.
He had a whiskers, beard.
Huh? Yeah. Yeah, I was like, what beard?
I'm not sure Ethan was watching that correctly. I didn't see a beard on him.
I didn't <What? not> either.
There are follicles.
Okay. Wow. Breaking news. That's going to get aggregated right there.
The guy, I think we all are monitoring the next week or until the deadline, and I'm writing a deadline thing for tomorrow, is Oubre, right? I mean, like, that's the salary slot that I think they're going to indicate over the next week. Like, do they think he could potentially be part of the future? I mean, some of that is, will Joe Lacob continue to eat the tax bill? But that is the salary slot that's time is ticking. I mean, he's an unrestricted free agent, and you obviously can't take that money and go elsewhere. If you keep him beyond the deadline, is there somebody out there that they think fills it better and that they could get in and have his rights going into the summer? So that's, to me, like, that is
so
the non-summer decision.
Now,
that's the now
they want to keep him, right? Essentially, if they keep him past the deadline, they want to keep him.
Yes, either that or don't believe they can pay that slot regardless. I mean, like, what's Oubre? You know, Oubre's probably going to make, you know, 17, 18 million a year.
Yeah. Oof. Which he just is. Luxury tax.
Yeah. You want to times that by the tax money. And they're going to be a repeater at some point, too. I think maybe next season.
But as Kerr keeps talking about how great it is to have these wings, you know, you got wings who can play, you know, opponent's best player. You got Wiggins who can play LeBron. You've got Oubre who can go play, you know, he guards Lillard, whoever he's guarding. You know, it's a lot to just say, do you just subtract them? What do you get for him? You got to get something for him. And even if it's to save the slot, you just got to get somebody who you can project into the future. You're not going to get a lot, obviously, on an expiring deal. They can move Bazemore in that slot. We all know there's pluses and minuses with Bazemore. They could theoretically play out the season with Bazemore there. What? Jordan Poole?
No.
Hey, what?
No, I was saying, Klay Thompson's talking about how he might not, you know, it might be opening night. It might be 3 weeks in the season. It might be a month. And when I come back, it's going to be 18
minutes.
It's going to be 18 minutes.
No question.
You know, that immediately increases Oubre's value to next season's team.
You know who else value increases? Bradley Beal.
Oh, man. Wow.
Like, yo, Bradley Beal, yes. Where can we get a guaranteed 20 points? Let's go.
Justinian Jessup with guaranteed 22 points a game. So. No, they got a lot of moving
Ethan
pieces.
Ethan says, Looney's like, I got this. Looney's like, I got this. I got the extra.
ISO Looney.
I did watch the last Jessup game, I will say, mainly because those feeds are amazing and the NBA could learn a thing or two and the live timeout is incredible. But they're throwing a lot. They're throwing like box and one at Jessup right now. It's getting a little
tough. So what's his NBA position, Ethan? Is he a three? What is he?
Yeah, I think he's a three, probably in some lineups you can play up. Defensively, I have seen him get burned, especially off ball. Now, they run some tricky stuff over there in Australia, but that has been an issue. But the thing with him, even when you see him miss, it's like the ball goes in and out. I mean, it's ridiculous shooting accuracy. So it will be very interesting to see if Kerr prioritizes the shooting over the defense, since we all know that, ironically, considering who he was as a player, he tends to prioritize the defense over the shooting.
What do you always say, MT? Kerr hated himself as a player, right?
Yeah, that's Ethan.
He coaches him away from Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr type player? I'm not playing that guy. Hell with that. It is kind of funny.
So, yeah, Jessup, I like this image or idea of Bob Myers with a scraggly beard, like looking all rough, like, they're going to believe in me when they see Jessup, right?
Looking like Alan smiling with the beard.
Yeah, watching Jessup. Jessup is going to save my legacy. They're going to know I can draft.
Remember Myers at that draft choice, the draft pick press conference during the Durant race? Oh my God.
The one that included Poole.
Oh.
He was like, maybe these guys will work out. Yeah.
Who knows?
Who cares?
Honestly,
who gives a shit? It's basketball.
It was like the bad Santa version of Myers.
He had a couple really strange press conference moments that year where he also, in a press conference, somebody asked him about, like, picks, and he's like, they're all, and Jacob Evans is still on the roster at this point, mind you, and he goes, well, you know, you never know, drafts are a crapshoot sometimes. I mean, look at me, I thought Jacob Evans was a rotation player.
Yes.
Jacob Evans was on the roster, and it was like,
I like that stuff.
That was stuff. Off the record. If you could just maybe not write that down.
Everybody know tape recorders were off during that? That is not.
I'm a believer in Jessup, though. You know, if I have to make a call on it, my word's not worth anything, but it seems, what I like about him, I like when guys have a model of what they're going to do. I like that when I talked to him, he said, I'm watching every Duncan Robinson game. I'm watching every Duncan Robinson game. I'm looking at everything he does because that is attainable for him in the NBA. It's not attainable for Justinian Jessup to be, I don't know, Kobe Bryant. But if you want to be Duncan Robinson, that's a valuable guy to have. I see that firmly within his capabilities. So that's, I think, a reason to be optimistic about Australian Jesus or whatever we're calling him right now. I mean, he's American, but he's in Australia.
You just got me with Smiley Geach with a beard. Like, I watched that game, and I did not see a beard on Smiley Geach. So you're just seeing things that I cannot see.
By the way, not that I'm any fashion expert, but it makes it look like he's already off the team. It makes it look like if this is a deep cut, but the famous World Cup commercial where you see what happens if you win the World Cup and maybe what happens if you lose. And Rooney, at one point, it shows him screwing up and then it flashes forward to him being in a trailer park. And he has pretty much the same facial hair as somebody who's down and out as Jessup has right now. So if he wants to stay on the team, I think he's got to go the Yankee way and, shave that up. It's just what I think.
Okay. The Yankee way.
Great podcast.
All right, everybody.
Good job, fellas.
Yeah, we came to the obvious conclusion that Alan Smiley Geach needs to be clean.
Slater's like, dude, once we start talking about dudes' beards, let's go.
We're done with that.
Slater, thank you for being the voice of reason on this episode. We are out of here.
Wiseman needs a beard.
Wiseman!